Bill lived there on 102nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, you know, it was kind of nice for Mama to have Taft there too, and Esther and her children. And then Howard moved out. I guess maybe he might have moved out before then. But the last one to stay in the old house was Monroe. But he finally moved out. And I forget what year all this was. But the house was then sold to a dentist to, he opened a dental office there. And that went on for a while, and then it became a boarding house. And it just kept going. We'd drive past and we'd see this place. Just, you know, it made us really feel bad to see the house deteriorating. So it was such a beautiful house, at least we thought. And nobody, the gardens were all gone, and pretty soon they even put cement in the front for the parking, and it just looked really run down. The whole neighborhood was run down, getting run down.
Were there any other Chinese around 1619?
Well, my cousin, Esau, she lived next door. After her husband died, I don't know whether she bought the house, but she came to live next door to be near my mother, because they were very close, Esau and my mother. We used to sit in the Pico Street in the breakfast room and sit and talk all the time, you know. But she had a hard time too, and after her husband died, she had to go work, and so she had about four little kids to take care of. And so they were the only other Chinese family on that block. In that neighborhood. Because the neighborhood that when we first moved there, as I say, it was like a country. But although there were houses there, but it was just so different from where we did the Ninth and Olive, it felt like a country. And my father used to love to take the P car and go to the end of the car. And LA High School was just new then. It was Pico and Rinpo, near Pico and Rinpo. He'd go there to get the air, take the air, and he'd get out and walk around. We'd go at night after dinner. One time he took me, and it seemed like I went out there, and it seemed like it was so lonely out there. I felt homesick. I got out to the end of the car line, walking around in the dark. But he loved it. He liked the fresh air, he said, to get the fresh air.
Do you feel any particular ties with Chinatown?
With Chinatown?
Right. Did you go there often?
We went there for dinner quite often on Sunday nights in Pico Street. We'd go there. And Grandview Restaurant, is that still
Grandview Gardens?
Well, it was called Grandview Restaurant. And we used to go there to eat. I didn't like it because I thought it was dirty, and I didn't care very much for Chinese food then. And I thought, oh, it's so dirty. I used to always be sure and wash it, you know, wipe my chopsticks off very well before I ate, wipe the rim of the bowl and everything. You know. I really didn't like to go to Chinatown to eat. I didn't have much time with China. I didn't feel much like
social activities.
Well, we used to go to dances there. They had what they call the Native Sons Hall. And that's where I knew Betty Lim. That's where I met her. And they used to have dances quite often. I used to go there. And then, of course, we used to go shopping there for Chinese food. But I didn't go. My Lily did. And then we had a Chinese cook, Di Sook. And he used to go down to Chinatown and get Chinese food. That was the only place you could get it, to be in Chinatown. I guess my dad went and got herbs, too. And then my parents would go there for the Chinese opera. Whenever there was a Chinese opera, they loved it. They just loved it.
Did any of the children go?
Well, yeah, we used to go, and I hated it. I thought it was so loud and noisy, and
you
couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand it, and I thought, how could anybody sit there for hours? And they would go, you know. They'd go every night.
Every night?
Every night that it was there, they would not miss it. That was one thing my mother just loved. And my dad. dad, too. They loved that Chinese opera whenever it came to town. It didn't come very often, see. But when it came, they would always go, and my sister would have to drive them down. She was the driver, so she'd have to drive them down. Sometimes I would go then and pick them up. One time, I remember, they had the Chinese actors had a cook, and he was a wonderful cook, and he came to our house and cooked a dinner for us.
Oh.
And, oh, wow, did he cook us a wonderful dinner. Even I liked that Chinese food.
Okay, Mrs. Larson, let's just talk a bit about what kinds of things you did for relaxation, recreation, besides these dances that you were held at 16, 19. What other things were done for fun?
Well, we went to, we had picnics. We had picnics, went to the beach. I didn't swim. I mean, my brothers all went. Everybody else went. So my sister and I, they didn't teach us swimming at that time, so I didn't know how to swim. But we liked to go to the beach then. We'd go to the park. And my father tried to make me learn how to play tennis. But I wasn't very good at that, neither was he. But he would get all dressed up in this. He had, you know, outfits for everything. He had his tennis outfit and real good tennis rackets. I'd go with him and we'd try to play tennis. But we had a teacher too. I think we had a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and I, well, when I was in grammar school, I played on the volleyball team. Played volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what else did we do?
Did you ever do other things that were of a Chinese nature besides going to see operas, for example, listening to Chinese music? Well, you played mahjong too, I guess.
Yes, we played mahjong a lot. For a while there, we were just absolutely fiends for it, you know. Just couldn't play enough mahjong.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real rage.
Mm-hmm. Any other Chinese kind of things, listening to Chinese music or Chinese dances?
No, we didn't care for Chinese music or Chinese. My father liked to play Chinese chess,
mm-hmm.
and he tried to teach. Well, I never did learn. I could never learn to play Chinese chess, but my brothers, well, some of them could play pretty well. Howard could play very well.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, that was one thing he liked to have the Chinese students come. He'd always get a Chinese student to play Chinese chess with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the old folks would come, some of the older, you know, my parents' friends, they would play jokki. What's that, you know, like Chinese dominoes?
Mm-hmm.
Chinese
mm-hmm.
dominoes.
Right.
But we didn't ever play those games.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your parents put a certain amount of effort in trying to instill a certain amount of Chinese culture into their children?
Well, they wanted to. They wanted us to learn Chinese. In fact, they wanted to send my brothers to China. Did I mention that
yes.
before?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And they never did get to go
mm-hmm.
because times were so unsettled. But they were very troubled by the fact that we didn't know any Chinese, and that we were growing up like Americans. That was a great concern to them. It was really bad. I know they felt ashamed when they would take us I remember going to San Francisco at the fair, San Francisco Fair in 1915. I was just young, and my Taft and I went, my father and mother took us. And we went to Chinatown to see all his friends, and they'd all say, they'd look at us very disdainfully and say, well, muy gong tong la, you know. And what kind of a Chinese are you? And I would feel very ashamed, and I know they did too. My parents would be apologetic and say, well, we're teaching them and so forth. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, they would like to have had us be more Chinese than we were, that they could see we were just growing up to be Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were.
Was there a conflict there, or was there fighting, or just arguments due to the fact that you wanted to be American and they wanted you to be more Chinese?
No, there was never any arguments, but just once in a while, as I said, my father would lay down the law, said, we're going to speak nothing but Chinese at home. But it would never last, you know, it would never last. And of course, he had us take these lessons, which we dutifully took these lessons. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I learned nothing. The others learned something more than I did, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I had this mental block, and I would learn nothing. Mm-hmm. But there was no arguments. They didn't ever, you know, lock us up and say, well, if you don't do this, you've got to... Mm-hmm. And they were very indulgent to us, you mm-hmm. know. And let us go out to dances, but they always said you have to be home by midnight.
Since you were becoming so Americanized, did they ever place any restrictions on the types of people you could go out dating with or the color of
No, because we always went with Chinese. We never did we ever go out dating with anything else but Chinese. Mm-hmm. You know, only Chinese came to our house. We didn't have, when we had these parties, it wasn't a mixed interracial, mixed group. Mm-hmm. No.
Were they still living when you got married?
Yes, or yes. Well, my father was not, but mm-hmm. my mother.
How did she feel
well,
about it?
Well, she was, at first she was pretty shocked. She said she was glad my father was dead. But then she got to like my husband very well. They got along extremely well together. Mm-hmm. She became reconciled to it, you know. Mm-hmm. She became reconciled to it. Because mm-hmm. they got along very extremely well, and he liked her. Mm-hmm. So she was just, and he was the kind of person who could get along well with everybody. And mm-hmm. got along well with my brothers and sisters. But mm-hmm. for me, it was really a bad, you know. I knew I was doing something I shouldn't do, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
When that time, that was not being done.
When did you get married?
1930.
Were there other cases of interracial marriage that
oh,
you knew?
Oh, probably. That, not that I knew of. I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been, but mm-hmm. I didn't know about it.
Did other people make you, do you think there were other people made you feel uncomfortable at all when you and your husband walked down the street?
Well, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't need other people. I felt uncomfortable.
Did you stay away from Chinatown or
Well, we were in Chicago.
Oh.
We were in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Well, we went to Chinatown once in a while, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But,
did you feel that people made you feel uncomfortable or made remarks or was just the,
Well, for example, trying to rent a place to live, you
mm-hmm.
know. When they saw me, they thought it was hard to rent a place in those days. And you know, they'd say, well, is, well, I remember one place, they said, is she going to wear Chinese clothes?
Was this in L.A.? Or?
No, this was in Chicago.
Oh.
And so, you know, I felt very uncomfortable about it.
That's funny.
Well, times have changed now.
That's
things
right.
are very different. All my cousins, all my nieces rather than cousins, you know, they're all married to Caucasians,
mm-hmm.
all my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
The only one, Monroe's children are the only ones that are marrying Chinese, and we always speak about that, how strange it is that his children are all marrying Chinese and nobody else is.
Uh-huh. Do Monroe's children speak Chinese?
None of us speak Chinese. Well, they're all like us.
That's right.
The children
yeah.
speak even less. I don't think that no attempt was ever made to
mm-hmm.
have the children speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter Jane
mm-hmm.
is the only one who has ever made any seems to have any interest in learning Chinese. None of them have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my sister's oldest son, only son Pete. His children, they sent them to Chinese school for a while, but that only lasted a couple of years. And I think they just, everybody just given up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just given up on it, you know. Just, what's the use?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know Holly's never had any, none of her children know Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
None of them.
Mm-hmm.
She never made any effort to teach them, although Dr. Lee, her husband's mother, well, she spoke a lot of, she spoke Chinese, you know. Well, she just died recently.
Right.
And, but we've just all become Americanized.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost that. That's really a shame. Really a shame, I think, that we don't have. had more interest in, you know, in even in knowing it. Although my brother Lincoln, as I say, the one who's in Honolulu, he seems to know quite a bit of Chinese. And he, when we went to Hong Kong about 3 years ago, he, in 1973, we went there, was more than 3 years, 6 years ago. And he just was so happy to be there with a lot of Chinese, you know, that he could speak with and that who understood him, and he was just using his Chinese like mad.
So your brothers actually were sent to Chinese school.
Yeah, they were sent to Chinese school in Chinatown. There was a Chinese school in Chinatown, and they went every day after school. So they had more lessons than I had. And there was also a very good teacher, her name was Kip King Lewis, a woman teacher who lived with my cousin who lived next door. This young woman, she was a girl, she went to USC, and she taught my cousin's children and my brother's too. She was an excellent teacher. I don't think our teachers were very good either, to tell the truth. The teachers that we had were not too good. They knew it, but they weren't very good at making us interested in Chinese and learning Chinese.
Were they teaching you characters or spoken Chinese? Or?
Well, just characters. You know, we'd have these books, and then we'd try to write it, and then they'd write it on the blackboard, and, you know, and they did their best, but Kit King was a much better teacher. And in fact, I read a letter, I found it just the other day, that she had offered me she went back to China then, I don't know when, it must have been 1930 around there, and got a job teaching English in Yenching University. And she wrote me a letter saying, offering me a job teaching journalism there. And that was, you know.
That was when?
1932. But I couldn't go then. The Japanese war was going on and so forth. So I was married, and I was working on the Times in Chicago. But I wish now I had gone. I wish I'd gone, because she wrote so glowing. She said, you don't have to know any Chinese, because this is for Chinese students who want to learn English. And you won't have to know any Chinese. And you only have to teach 7 hours a week. Hours a week, and you get $150 a month, which is pretty good in Chinese money. And she said, we live on this campus, a very lovely campus. It's where Peking University is now. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that when I was in China. I wish I'd looked up. I'd forgotten about this letter entirely. I completely forgot about it. So I just have to run across it. But my whole life would have been changed, I think, if I'd taken that opportunity to go to China and teach journalism.
That's right.
But didn't do it. But I was afraid then. They didn't have jets, too. That was another reason. I was afraid to go on a boat. I would have gotten seasick.
Right. Okay, you mentioned that you also wanted to talk about your mother and her having her children.
Oh, yes. My mother had 8 children, all at home, all born at home. And she had a midwife, a German midwife. Her name was Mrs. Mueller. And I remember her. She was a little short, stocky woman. And every time we saw her coming, we knew there was going to be a baby. And then there was a nurse called Mrs. Sylvester, who came to take care of the baby. Oh, I was just baby crazy. I just loved babies.
Well, you were the oldest?
No, I was the second oldest. Lily, my sister Lily, who died in 73, was the oldest, and I was the second oldest. And I remember when Taft was born, the secretary, my father's secretary, said, the stork came and brought you a baby brother. So I was 4 years old then, so I ran out on the porch looking for the stork. Not the baby, but the stork. But my mother was so brave. She was tiny, really tiny, small as you or maybe small. And we never heard one peep out of her, you know. She had these children. They all were, almost all were born at night.
Somebody else come?
No. They were almost all born at night. I just, I'd known something was going on. We'd never hear anything, you know. She never made any noise. We didn't even know that there was anyone, anything had happened. And in the morning, there'd be a lot of scurrying around. And we'd see Miss Sylvester was there, and the new baby, and oh, it was so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running home from school. I went to 10th Street School then, I guess. When I was a teacher, I went to 10th Street. I'd run home as fast as I could to see the new baby, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to make these flannel diapers. We used to hem them. You know, they didn't have Pampers then.
Right.
You had to make your own diapers.
Uh-huh.
So that would be my job, to hem the diapers. I just loved to do it. Mrs. Sylvester, she'd make some, and I'd help her make those diapers.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, my dad would give her this gauge, you know, not gauge, but it's wine.
Oh,
chicken
right,
wine.
Right.
And it's supposed to make you strong.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And she used to take that after childbirth. And before childbirth, she took certain herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to make you have an easy childbirth.
Mm-hmm. Do you think many mothers had their children at home back in those days?
Yeah. I think practically maybe even American mothers had their babies at home then. Because going to the hospital wasn't so... It came later on, I think. But... she had hers at home, and we were all brought up on Eagle's brand evaporated milk. I remember that. Every time we'd see this Eagle brand evaporated, none of us had any trouble, you know. She didn't nurse us.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't nurse us. I don't think she nursed any of us.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she did. Maybe she told me that she nursed Lily and me. But afterwards, she had so many of them, you know. They came one after another.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my father was very disappointed when I came, because I was a girl, and by that time he wanted a boy, you know,
mm-hmm.
He wanted a boy. So he used to dress me like a boy.
Really?
Yeah, I have a picture of myself and Lily, with me dressed like a little boy. I think that's
why. Boys' clothes?
Boys' clothes. You know, not all the time, but to dress up in, you know, special occasions.
You were wearing pants,
yeah,
and shirt.
Yeah, a little boy suit. Because he wanted a boy so badly, he was so disappointed, you know. So when Taft was born, and they found, the word came that he was a boy, well, somebody shouted out, and he was a boy. My dad was just he was so happy. And they had a great big banquet for him, you know. They had these children, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Banquet. They had a great big, especially big one for him.
Mm-hmm. You think any of that influence of that carried over at all? Do you think the American-born Chinese here had any preference for sons, too?
I think some of them do. Yeah, I think a lot of them do. I think even Americans, plain Americans, like to have some of them, you know, would like to have sons first.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure, but...
Mm-hmm.
But I thought she was so brave, you know, to go through all that and not make a sound. The only time that I knew anything about children, I didn't know where they came from even until,
mm-hmm.
I think even when my brother Lincoln was born, and I must have been 13 years old then, and I still didn't know. And I wasn't terribly worried, except he was born night around 11 o'clock or something like that. And my mother had a very hard time, a much harder time than him, because he was getting older by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her telling my father, oh, Sun Fu, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
When he went up to see her, after the baby's born, she said, oh, Sun Fu. So I got it. And then that kind of scared me. I didn't know what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. We're still looking for the stork.
Yeah, still looking for the stork.
Right. Okay, you mentioned that you were hired by the LA Daily News to cover Madame Chiang Kai-shek's visit to the United
mm-hmm.
States. Can you talk a little bit more about your coverage of her stay here and what it was like? Or
well, it was a big media event. It was really big, and they had all sorts of, everybody came from all over the country to cover her. And she was, I don't remember how many days she was here, several days. And I remember especially one time I went to the Ambassador Hotel, or I guess that's where she was staying, and met her there, and I got to shake hands with her, and I was so thrilled. At that time I thought she was great. Afterwards I've changed my opinion quite a bit. But at that time I thought she was just, you know, a great person. And she was just beautiful, dressed so nicely. But at that time also my sister Lily was in the Chinese consulate, working in the Chinese consulate. And she brought back stories about how finicky, you know, the Madame Chiang and her party were, how they insisted on this and that, and they were very hard to deal with, not easy to get along with at all when it came to and she was insisting on silk sheets, I think, in the hotel. She was complaining because she didn't have silk sheets. I can imagine that she would. So when I got to see her, I asked her how the generalissimo was. She said he was fine, he was home, and so forth. Oh, I thought that was great. I wrote that all in my story. Then at the Hollywood Bowl, she was a beautiful speaker.
Mm-hmm.
She did very well. She made a wonderful impression on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's good looking and charming, and she spoke so well, so eloquently.
Mm-hmm.
I met some of her Wellesley schoolmates, college mates.
Mm-hmm.
I did a story on them, and they came to see her at one of the receptions.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a real big media event, and she came off A number one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much she got out of it, how much money she got out of it. She came to raise funds.
Mm-hmm.
But she certainly made a wonderful impression. I have at home, I still have a lot of the brochures and the very fancy things that were, you know, given the press file that they gave us and all that about her.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite an experience, but at the same time I was really nervous too, because I had to do these stories, and it was a nervous strain. The whole thing was a nervous strain. I was glad it was over with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Lily worked for the Chinese consulate?
Yes.
What
in
was
fact,
she
became,
there?
First she started as secretary. She was a secretary. But she worked herself up to become the consul. She was the consul when she died. Not the consul general, but the consul. And she could speak Chinese pretty well. In fact, I didn't get to hear it, but she made a speech in Chinese when she retired. But they didn't pay her very well at all. They didn't have any kind of a pension system or anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
But she was always extremely meticulous about everything. She was a wonderful, she was very well organized. She could run things very well. She practically ran the consulate office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without her, they were.
Mm-hmm. Did Lily go to college?
She went to USC too.
Uh-huh. How many of your brothers and sisters went on to college?
Well, half went. I don't know whether he graduated or not, because when my father died, all that stopped because there was no money. And William went to Berkeley. He always wanted to go to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Berkeley and stayed for a couple of years, I think, until my father died. Maybe not even that long, because he didn't get to finish. And I don't think Howard went. Holly didn't go. And Monroe, did he go? He went to art school, because he's an artist. And Lincoln, my younger brother, he went to UCLA and graduated.
Mm-hmm.
But he said on his own, my father was no longer around to pay tuition.
Mm-hmm. So the ones who didn't go might not have gone because your father had already passed away.
Yes,
and there was
no money.
To go.
That's right, there was no money.
Mm-hmm.
And don't know whether Howard wanted to go. I suppose he would have gone. Holly wasn't very much of a student. She didn't care that much for being a student. I don't know whether she would have gone even in her life.